Seems like almost every day you'll hear, either on the radio or TV or reading the newspapers or somewhere, about somebody taking vengeance on someone else. They think that they were wronged, or believe that they were wronged, so they in some way come back and take vengeance on that person. Or sometimes it's a company maybe they're taking vengeance on. Tonight's lesson, Jesus is talking to us about vengeance. In the Sermon on the Mount, recall, he said, "Unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter into the kingdom of heaven." Right after that statement, then he lists a variety of ways in which their righteousness was to exceed that of the scribes and Pharisees. He's talked about hatred, he's talked about divorce, he's talked about adultery, he's talked about taking oaths. Tonight, he turns the disciples' attention to that of vengeance. This is found in Matthew chapter 5. We'll begin reading in verse 38. Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 38. Jesus begins by saying, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth." And of course, the individuals he was talking to, he was talking to Jewish people, and they were very well aware of all of those places in the law of Moses that talked about this law of retaliation. Sometimes it's called the law of like for like. Back in, we'll just read one of the accounts in the Old Testament. Leviticus chapter 24. Beginning in verse 17. Leviticus 24, beginning in verse 17, we're introduced or told about this law of retaliation, this law of like for like. In verse 17, we're told, "Whoever kills any man shall surely be put to death. Whoever kills an animal shall make it good, animal for animal. If a man causes disfigurement of his neighbor, as he has done, so shall it be done to him. Fracture for fracture, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. As he has caused disfigurement of a man, so shall it be done to him. And whoever kills an animal shall restore it, but whoever kills a man shall be put to death." There's the law of retaliation, the law of like for like. Why does Jesus tell these people that your righteousness has to exceed that of the scribes and Pharisees? Well, as was often the case, that many of the Jewish people had taken that law and turned it into something they weren't supposed to turn into. That law of like for like was to prevent those type of the murders and beatings and all of those type of things. It was supposed to prevent those, because the idea was, when that law was put into place, that before you did something to someone, before you took someone's eye out, before you broke someone's arm, or before you did this, you would remember, "Oh, well, that's going to be done to me. So before I put that person's eye out, I'm thinking about the law of like for like. That means, is it worth me losing my eye over to take his eye out?" So that was its purpose. Its purpose was to prevent those type of things. But what was often the case, it was used as a means of retaliation. It was used as a means, well, this was done to me, so therefore it's my right to do it back. Jesus says, your righteousness has to exceed that. I don't want that type of retaliation in my kingdom. So that law was actually intended to prevent revenge. It was used as a measure to prevent revenge, but it had been perverted by many people. Let's turn, before we go any further, to Romans chapter 12. And read a few verses there that have to do with this. Romans chapter 12, we'll begin in verse 17. These, of course, are Paul's words to the church at Rome. Romans 12, verse 17. Paul says here, by inspiration, repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it's possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him a drink. For in so doing, you'll heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. So, when Jesus says, you've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for tooth, Jesus says, now, but I tell you not to resist an evil person. Whatever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him two. Now, he gives three different examples. You know, Jesus did that throughout his teaching. He would give some lesson, some principle, something he was trying to teach, and then he would give a number of examples of, this is what I'm talking about. Of course, that's the way you're supposed to teach. And that's what Jesus did. So he says, if someone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the left one as well. Now, was someone slapping you on the right cheek, was that life-threatening? Of course not. Jesus isn't even hinting that you should never resist even someone trying to kill you. Jesus isn't saying that. I know some people have taken that viewpoint. That's not what he's teaching at all. He's trying to teach us about revenge and retaliation. That's what he's trying to teach us. He's not teaching us to be pacifist in any way. But if someone slaps you on the right cheek, that isn't going to kill you. That's not life-threatening. It's an insult, right? Almost in all societies, if someone slaps you on the cheek, that's an insult. Jesus says, don't retaliate. Jesus says, that's not important enough to retaliate. That's not going to kill you, being slapped on the right cheek. So he says, turn to him the other. What would that tell the other person if you turned him the other cheek? That you're not going to retaliate. Here, slap the other one. So that's what he's wanting his followers to understand. Many of the Pharisees and the scribes would have immediately, wow, I've been insulted. I'm going to slap you back. Right? That's what they would have done. Jesus says, I expect you, citizens of the kingdom, that will be citizens of the kingdom, I expect you to live above that. Just because you're insulted doesn't mean you have to come back and immediately insult someone in return. He says, I don't want you to be like that at all. And then he talks about if someone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, that was your inner cloak or inner coat. He says, let him have your cloak also. Let him have your outer one. Well, the Old Testament had some very specific laws about that outer garment. Let's see if I wrote down where that's located. It is in Exodus chapter 22. I think that's worth reading. Exodus chapter 22, verse 26. Exodus 22, verse 26. We're told there, if you ever take your neighbor's garment as a pledge, you shall return it to him before the sun goes down. For that is his only covering. It's his garment for his skin. What will he sleep in? And it will be that when he cries to me, I will hear, for I am gracious. See, these Jewish people knew that they were not supposed to take that outer garment. So Jesus says, If someone sues you and they want to take away your inner garment, go ahead and give them your outer one. Even though the law of Moses said you're never to take someone's outer garment. Jesus says, it's not a big deal. It shows that you don't have a spirit of retaliation. Because what would most people do? Well, if you take my inner coat, I'm going to retaliate. I'm going to get back at you. I'm going to take it back from you. Again, this wasn't life-threatening. People weren't going to die because someone took away their tunic. They weren't. But Jesus is teaching a principle. He's teaching a lesson about attitudes. When you're wronged, when you're insulted, or when something like that is taken. He also mentions, if someone compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Of course, this happened, right, during the time of Jesus. This was quite, I guess you'd say, quite often done. In Luke chapter 23, we see an example of this happening. This, of course, was done by the Roman army. They weren't the first ones to do it. I think historically it goes back to the Persians and King Cyrus. He's the one that started this idea that the government could force you, especially the soldiers, could force you, even if you were just a civilian, to do certain things. Well, of course, we knew this happened in the time of Jesus. In Luke chapter 23, verse 26, this, of course, is Jesus being led away from Pilate. Verse 26 says, "Now as they led him away, they laid hold of a certain man, Simon a Cyrenian, who was coming from the country. And on him they laid the cross that he might bear it after Jesus." So there was a case of them compelling a civilian to do something. Well, Jesus says, if this Roman soldier comes up and says, "I need you to carry this a mile and you must do it," you don't do that begrudgingly. You offer, you may do it 2 miles. Because there weren't any other type of people in the first century that were going to do that. See, he wants disciples, he wants members of the church, he wants citizens of the kingdom to be different and live above how everyone else lives. And much of that is what he's doing in the Sermon on the Mount. He's telling his followers how I want you to live above the rest of the world. I don't want you to live like they do. The world retaliates over everything. Think about how much road rage goes on. Wow, someone pulls out in front of you, or someone, you know, pulls in front of you real fast. Well, that's a big deal. Man, you ought to try and kill that person. See, that's the way the world operates, isn't it? You hear about that all the time. Jesus says, that's not the way I want my people to live. I want you to live above that. You have a higher moral code. And that's what Jesus is doing in the Sermon on the Mount. Except your righteousness exceeds that of. So he's pointing to a higher level of righteousness, right living. And that's one of the ways he was saying do it. So if someone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other one. That's not life-threatening. Don't let that become a huge deal to you. Or if someone takes away your tunic, so what? Maybe they needed it. Or if someone, a soldier, compels you to go with him 1 mile, big deal, that's just a mile. Ask him if he wants you to go too. See, none of those have to do with self-preservation. Those are not life-threatening situations. Nowhere does Jesus say that if someone attacks you, you should let them kill you. That's just not in the Bible anywhere. And that's not what he's trying to get across. He's talking about vengeance, and he's talking about retaliation. He's talking about our attitude when someone does things like this to us, like insults us, or even steals something like that from us, or government oppression. If you want to put compelling someone to go with him 1 mile, government oppression, I guess you could call it that. So it says, I don't want you to live like the rest of the world. And I guess that's the main lesson to learn from this. Don't live like the rest of the world lives. You know, our society has become very vengeful. I mean, you look at somebody cross-eyed and they get mad at you. And they want to do something back to you. And so no wonder we live in a society where we don't trust people very much. Because we see how vengeful people are. How they want to retaliate. How if you save them from an oncoming train, they'll sue you because you hurt their arm. See, you get to the point where you don't trust people. Jesus says, I don't want you to live like that. That's the way most of the world is. I don't want you to live like that. So what if you're insulted? So what if someone steals a piece of garment? He says, that's not a big deal. He says, in turn, this is what I want you to do. Verse 42. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. So instead of being selfish and self-centered and just concerned about yourself, it says, I don't want you to be like that. That's the way the world is. I want you to be generous. I want you to be liberal. I want you to be ready to give to people, ready to help people. If someone needs something, then help them. And again, he wants us to understand we can't give away everything we have. If someone comes and says, I need $10,000, I'll say, I'm glad you do. You'll have to go somewhere else. I don't have it. I could sell my car and give it to him. Does Jesus want me to do that? No. Not at all. How many people do we see and know that just want people to do stuff for them and give to them without making any effort on their part at all? And you probably get tired of seeing this in the world. I know I do. I see it at school and I see it everywhere. People just wanting handouts. Jesus never condones that. Jesus doesn't condone that. That's not what he's even hinting at here. Paul addressed this over in 2 Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. Notice what he says there. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 10. 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 10. For even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. For we hear that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies. See what those people were doing? Jesus says, don't give to them. Don't give them anything. Because by giving to them, you're actually making it worse. So in some cases, when people ask us, we're actually hurting them by giving it to them. Jesus said, don't do that. That's a big mistake. Because that was happening there in Thessalonica. People were asking for handouts so they wouldn't have to work. And since they weren't working, they were becoming busybodies. So Jesus says, if you give to them, or Paul is saying, if you give to those people, you're making the matter worse. You're making them worse busybodies. So when Jesus says back in Matthew 5, give to him who asks you and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. There are qualifications for that. There's qualifications for everything Jesus has said so far in Matthew chapter 5. You know, with all the things we've talked about with hatred and divorce and adultery and taking oaths, we have to look at all that's said in the New Testament. So he does want us to be generous. He does want us to be good neighbors. He does want us to be people who share. But he doesn't want us to give to people when it actually makes the situation worse. That's what Paul wants us to know. So right along with that, you've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Does the Bible ever say that? Nope. You've heard that it was said. Some people said that. The Bible doesn't say it, though. The Bible does say, you shall love your neighbor. Countless places in the Old Testament says, you shall love your neighbor. But if you look up all those places that says, you shall love your neighbor, never one place does it say, you should hate your enemy. It's just not there. People said that and thought it. The Bible didn't teach it. The law of Moses didn't teach it. But there were many places that said, you shall love your neighbor. People might have gotten that idea. People might have thought that. But they weren't supposed to hate their enemies. The Old Testament as far as I know, never said anything about loving your enemies. Talk about loving your neighbor, but it never says anything about hating your enemies. In Romans chapter 13, verse 9, Paul writes to the church there and tells them something that kind of brings some of the law of Moses into the gospel, into the new law, the law of Christ. Verse 9 of Romans 13, "For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet. And if there's any other commandment, are all summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law." So Jesus says, you've heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Why? That you may be sons of your Father in heaven, because that's how He is. That's His characteristic. For He makes His sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. Love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. That is tough to do. Were many people doing that in the first century? Apparently not. Remember the parable of the Good Samaritan, Luke chapter 10. Jesus there is teaching in that about this principle. Luke chapter 10, beginning in verse 35. Luke 10, verse 35. This is that toward the end of the parable, Jesus says, "On the next day when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, 'Take care of him.'" Now, he had never met this guy in his life. "And whatever more you spend, when I come again, I'll repay you. So which of these three do you think was neighbor to him who fell among the thieves?" And he said, "He who showed mercy on him." Then Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." That's what he was teaching. And that's what, when he says, "You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy," he says that's not what is taught. Says you need to love even the people you don't know. Don't know at all. So in that parable of the Good Samaritan, that's what he shows. This is what love really means. You don't just love people you know. It's not just loving your neighbor. You want what's best for others. That's really the idea of love in the New Testament, is seeking what's best for the other person, seeking their welfare, what's best for them. What do they really need? And you supply it as best you can. Because it says if you do that, you will be sons of your Father in heaven. Why? Because it doesn't make any difference. He sends the rain on everybody. Today, if you noticed, I know driving from here to Neosho and back, I know there was some rain that fell on some unjust people, because I could point out some of the houses of the unjust people that went by. Rain was falling on their houses and on their land too. So you can't just help those people that you like. See, that's what the Pharisees would do. They would just help people they like. He says, if you're going to be my disciple, your righteousness has to be at a higher level. He says, that's one way you're going to show it. And if you do, then you're going to be like your heavenly Father. You're going to be sons of your Father in heaven. You will not just do what you can and seek what's good for people that you like. Because the Father doesn't, that's not how He acts. He sends rain on everybody. The rain that came today was on the just and the unjust, the evil and the good, as He says. And that's how we are to be too. We can be like God in that sense, have that characteristic, and at the same time, we won't be like the scribes and Pharisees. Very few occasions in the life of Christ does Jesus ever commend the scribes and Pharisees for anything. And just think about all the occasions he talked about the scribes and Pharisees, and it was almost always in a negative way. There was hardly anything good to say about them. Jesus says, I don't want my disciples to be like the scribes and Pharisees. I want you to live at a higher level. Seek a higher righteousness, right living. And it says, if you do that, you'll be sons of your Father in heaven. Not that being good to unjust people makes you like the Father. It doesn't. But those who are children of God act this way. Being good by itself doesn't make you a child of God. The Bible says you have to experience a new birth for that. But someone who's experienced the new birth, then is supposed to act like this as an indication that he is a child of God. So that's where it starts, with the new birth. But that's not where it ends. It starts with the new birth, and then Jesus wants you to live on a higher plane, on a higher level than the rest of the world. And that's what he wants. And he says one way you do that is you don't live a life where you're always trying to take vengeance, revenge something, revenge somebody, retaliate. He says that's not how I want my people to live. I want you to live on a higher plane. And the world needs to see that. The world needs to see we've experienced a new birth and are living on a higher plane. Tonight, when we lead this, when we sing this invitation song, think about the plane you're living on. Are you a child of God? Are you living on a higher plane? If not, we encourage you to come as we stand and sing this song.